All right, a couple quick things you need to know about this podcast before you actually listen to the podcast. Number one is that we are recording it on Thursday, January 14th. Never mind the fact that one of my desktop clocks says January 13th in front of me. The other one says 14th. I'll figure that out later. But anyway, Thursday the 14th instead of on Friday this week. Number two is that you need to go enter our Honor 5X contest. This is a $199 phone. We've got three to give away. And just go to androidcentral.com/Honor5X contest. All one word. Just lump it all together. And we've got a whole bunch of different chances to enter. And again, we're giving away three. So good luck with that. The third thing you need to know, well, just go listen to the podcast. We'll tell you lots more things you need to know. Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It is episode number 270 for, what's today? Thursday, January 13th, 2016. I got the date right. Thank you. That's two in a row, I think. Or did we do the first one? I don't remember. Anyway, welcome back. Welcome to the show. I am Phil Nickinson. I am currently still running Android Central. How about that? We are home. We are back from CES, which is great. Yeah, that was a good podcast. Thanks, everybody. I'm done. Russell Holly's here with us.
Solid
Russell,
teamwork.
Save me.
We're good to go.
All right, all good?
We're not done. You did. I didn't go to CES, but you did. I sat here and stared at the screen and watched in wonder as all of the cool things happened that I was really cool with not going to CES right up until like the day before it started when I saw all the cool stuff you were touching, and then I really wanted to be there.
I'm not sure I'd go that far just yet. We've also got Mike Wolfson with us. Mike, as you know, you should know, Mike develops our app. That's the most important thing he does. Second to that, Mike is a Google developer expert, and you were at a conference. You were at the Ubiquity Dev Conference, so in a minute, I'm going to have you tell me what the hell that is.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk CES, because neither of you were there. Do you have any questions? Did you see anything that we saw that looked really incredible and cool?
Two things that I care about, and they're both really related, and not at all Android. The first is are the new Vive controllers super good?
Yes. So HTC Vive, if you haven't seen it, it's now the Vive Pre, by the way. This is the collaboration between HTC and Valve and Steam VR. It is the whole room VR, and honestly, that was the big thing I took out of, this is my second demo, it's been almost a year since the first one I did. And the first one I did, the controllers were still wired, that's how long ago that was. But it's now the Vive Pre, the controllers have been redesigned, the visor is smaller, which is really great, the strap's been changed up, and it now has a little camera in the front that can see what is around you, and you literally get, you know, this Matrix effect, or the sonar from Batman, we also called it. And it's really incredible. Like, if you're standing in front of me, I can see you. I can see your outline. Alex was standing in front of me. I could see Alex. I could see it was Alex. I could see details on a shirt. It was really crazy stuff. Really cool.
Which is super, super useful, because the last time I used Vive demo, I've done it three times now, and the last time that I did the Vive demo, I was with Chris Sewell, who walked up in the middle of it, and I couldn't see him, and he tapped with both fingers on the center of the visor, and it sounded like a gunshot went off in my head, and that really sucked. And so I really feel like, based on my complaining and moaning, that they added this camera specifically for me.
They did, in fact, not mention you at all.
Well, that was polite of them.
But I tell you what's really cool was they put a chair behind me and said, all right, turn around, look at the chair, sit down on the chair. And I'm like, but okay. And it worked. And there's still that weird disconnect between your brain and reality. But it did work, and it was pretty cool. So, yes, that was very cool. I finally got to do Oculus Rift, by the way.
My second question was, did you like the Rift, and do you feel like the Rift is the same or worse than the Vive?
I think it's different.
That's my question. I want to know, because you guys have probably tried all of the different VR headsets. I'd like to know, are they all the same? Are they different? What's the difference between a $5 cardboard and a $500 Oculus Rift?
So that really comes down to my big learning point for VR for the week was, and this was sitting down with the HTC guys, Chet Falasek, who's just awesome. But the different kinds of VR, you have, I think we might've talked about it on this podcast. No, I guess we talked about it on the CES podcast. Positional VR, rotational VR, and then whole room VR. Now, Gear VR somewhere in the middle. Cardboard is you know, positional. You're just kind of standing there. I think Gear VR and to some extent Oculus is definitely more rotational. You can move around a good bit more. And I'm probably not even quite looking at this properly, but the different tiers, we've talked about that before. And then you have Vive, which is obviously whole room. And very much you have lasers shooting down from the base stations, mapping out the whole room. So really cool stuff. So Rift, I thought was excellent. Rift was really well done. I get less dizzy with Rift than I do Gear VR. And a lot of that, I talked to them a good little bit about it really. I mean, Gear VR is about the cost saving measures. I mean, they could have put more things in there if they want, but then it wouldn't have been $99. Rift was a lot easier on my eyes than Gear VR is. I can't do Gear VR for more than like 2 minutes. But sure. Rift, I sat there and played a game. My big thing with Rift was I had a lot of light bleed like right here coming in. And apparently that's by design. But I don't want to say it ruined the experience, but it changed the experience. But it was still a lot of fun. I think Oculus Rift is probably going to be more attainable. I have a feeling it's going to be a good bit cheaper than Vive. Though maybe they'll surprise me. I would not turn down Rift. If somebody offered it to me, I would take it in a heartbeat. Put it that way. But yeah, it's a different feel. And I only did two demos, but with the Rift demo I did, you very much got a sense in the gameplay that you are supposed to just stand right here. You can do things, you can move around a little bit, but you're not supposed to go anywhere. Vive, the demos and games are very much designed for you to move and wander around and get up inside things, but not so much Rift.
Interesting to note that at the Ubiquiti Dev Summit, they did a whole segment on the Tango device, which is kind of one of those things that you wonder if it has legs and if it's a product that Google cares about.
Well, I mean, it's got new life now. So Lenovo is making, it was a Tango phone, right? I was going to the airport right as that was going down. I from a developer standpoint, I think so, sure. And somebody needs to play around with that. I don't think we're anywhere close to like consumer like Tango devices for whatever reason, though.
The existing Tango device, which I have and is really difficult to work with, is still a 4.4 OS device or 4.0. I don't know what version, but isn't even Lollipop, and is really kind of crashy and battery sensitive. You know, as kind of Android devices are, and there's Android devices with lots of stuff in them. Even more so, I was really surprised that on the stage when they were demoing Tango, they were still using that first generation device, because it really is difficult to work with. But also because that second gen device is, at least advertised.
Sure. Yeah, I just don't have a feel for what's going on with that. It was kind of weird and sort of very last minute too. Yeah, I don't think there was anything else specifically Android that really stood out for me all week. And not that we expected a lot. The Mate 8 announcement was pretty good. I thought I'd been using it for, 2 weeks at that point. it is like so many other Huawei devices, really nice phone, really bad hardware, or really bad software. So, I mean, maybe they'll fix things one day. Maybe they won't. I'm not holding my breath for that. I think Huawei still has a long way to go in the software department. They know this. They've been told this. They're going to be told, we're going to say it again. I don't think that's going to stop anytime soon. But that was cool. The new Huawei watches, cool. The new Samsung watches, okay. If you like refrigerators with big giant tablets in them, this was your show. I don't know. I'm kind of excited about that. I mean, look, we all talk about needing some sort of home hub sort of thing, and this actually bridges into Ubiquiti, I guess. I mean, we have all this stuff that we're trying to tie together and no one real way to do it. We have our phones and we have our tablets, but that's not the same thing as me walking up to the wall and seeing a message as I walk by or on the fridge or whatever.
Still requires some sort of hub if you want to use the Philips Hue lights or the LifeX lights. Either you buy a really expensive light bulb that kind of has a hub built into it, or you have to install, the Wink hub or something already in your house. So the fact is that it exists now. That hub exists, and I think a lot of different players want to be that hub. you know, like the Google's router.
Everybody and, wants to
Alexa.
Be. Yeah, I mean, everybody wants to be it. Nobody's being it yet, and OnHub's not quite there yet. I mean, it's a router at this point. It's not really doing anything more than that for me. Mm-hmm. Anything else you saw, Russell, that you can think of? We, I mean, we saw the first Snapdragon 820 device. Okay. It was a, I mean, it was a phone. I don't know what else to say about that.
It's, you know, there's not a whole lot of reason to get excited about Snapdragon 820 until we have like a major consumer device with it.
And that'll be soon. That'll be real soon. I mean, LG was, you know, retweeting Snapdragon stuff, or maybe Qualcomm was retweeting LG stuff yesterday. It's like, we know it's coming.
We've done this dance with YouTube before.
Yes. Cool. Yes. Yeah.
A Mobile World Congress, I assume, right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And that's next. So we're already planning MWC in Barcelona at the end of February. Definitely. Yeah, so let's just transition into Ubiquiti. So first answer me this. What the hell does Ubiquiti mean in this sort of technological sense?
I don't know. I mean, I think going into it, I think what people thought Ubiquiti meant was all the magic stuff with Glass and their project, I think that's what it's called with the little motion detecting thing. Think of Ubiquiti, where computers are everywhere and you're controlling them everywhere. That's kind of what we thought, but notably absent was that sort of stuff from this conference. What it was about was Brillo and Weave, lots and lots and lots of that stuff over and over and over again. You could tell that was the product they're really pushing. They really want to like kind of own that hardware space, and this is kind of their platform for that. So there was a lot of Brillo and Weave. There was a bit of Android Wear, a bit of the thing we mentioned before, which was the Android TV, Android Auto, and that was about it. No real surprises. No real like. You know, we didn't see the new version of Glass that they announced, or there weren't any demos of that Project Aura. So it was pretty kind of normal stuff and stuff that we knew about already.
Let's back up for those who don't yet know what Brillo and Weave are. What are those two things? Why do I care? How will they work together?
Okay, and this is where Russell is going to help me when I start to say things that aren't true. But so basically, Brillo and Weave are two separate platforms designed to work together. Brillo is basically a hardware implementation that is stripped down Android open source, so kind of like a very stripped down platform for Android that doesn't include a lot of things you don't need on hardware. So it's a specification that then vendors will use to build compatible hardware devices, just like the Android open source compatibility. So vendors will need to be Brillo certified, and that means that they, you know, support this Brillo kind of software brand, software hardware integration. Weave is then a web-based protocol that allows you to kind of access those hardware components out in the wild. So you can do things like provision them and load new software on them, you know, update their software, things like that. So basically, they're two different platforms kind of designed to work together. And of course, then there is Nest Weave, which, as we know, has nothing to do with any of this stuff. So
great.
Yeah, Google's Weave is basically a communication layer that's going to be really similar to how things like the Hue bulbs communicate with things that are not Hue bulbs. And that's really the point is, like we said earlier, someone trying to be the hub. This is Google saying, here's an entire kind of plug-and-play thing for connecting all of the things that you already have. Whereas Brillo is all for, you know, building new stuff that you know, will do, you know, all of these kind of smart things with an operating system that the vendor then doesn't have to build themselves.
Okay.
So let's talk a little bit about kind of what Brillo is for and like kind of where Brillo is right now. So I will show a... everybody at the conference got this really neat little toolbox. everybody kind of wants to know what the goodies are in there, but I want to talk about basically the boards that we got because it's kind of useful to kind of give a little idea about what Brillo is and where it's going. So everybody got an Edison board or a Dragon board. Right now, those are the two boards that are supported for Brillo, meaning that they have Brillo images that you can load and install software on them. So this is an Intel board. The Dragon board is a is from, sorry, not Marvell, because Marvell is the third. Dragon board is from Qualcomm, sorry. But anyway, what these vendors are, these chip guys want their platforms to be out in the wild, because they're, you guys have probably heard this, you know, thing that there's going to be 6 million IoT devices coming online next year, and by the end of this year, there will be 50 devices for every human on the planet. Intel, Marvell, Qualcomm, AMD, all these guys want to be those chips that get out in the world. They're all set, you know, sensing this huge market, and so they all want to be that market. Putting these boards out in developers' hands means I'm in my garage, I'm attaching wires to this board and prototyping that on Intel. So when I go to production, I may say, ooh, well, I know it works on Intel, you know, let's just, you know, use that chipset. So right now, Google, Intel, Qualcomm, they all want us to start prototyping and start using this platform so that we kind of start building hardware that uses all these things, and then we're kind of stuck, for lack of a better term.
So, I mean, I guess really what we can take out of all this is that's not behind, but that's how early on in the process we are still in the life of Brillo and Weave.
Yeah, that's a really good astute assessment. I mean, it's still really early. The hardware is still, these are just dev boards, you know. It's like years ago when they had, I don't know if they did have this, but, you know, an Android dev phone. I mean, before the G1, this is kind of like the step before that, right?
Well, we have this a whole post on that. If you go to historyofandroid.com. I was more excited about that than anybody else, apparently. Come on, you guys got to properly shill our own stuff here.
We do.
I'm excited. I gave you the opportunity.
The developer boards for this stuff, I mean, Qualcomm does developer boards for everything, and they hand them out for optimization for a lot of stuff, and Intel's been doing it more and more with smaller stuff as well. So that's not particularly unexpected. And we do occasionally see kind of fun projects come from them, but it's really indicative of how early on we are with Weave. And I think we will see stuff happen with Brillo before, I'm sorry, we'll see stuff with Weave happen before we see like a huge selection of Brillo products come out. And I think the idea is for people to not really know that they are Brillo products, that they just kind of get plugged in and work with your Android phone when you go to do, you know, connected home stuff.
Well, I mean, you're not going to be able to market Brillo as a product for any number of reasons.
No, but I mean,
buy this lamp with Brillo. No.
The big thing will be that it works with, you know, Android. For some reason, they're not using Android at home as a brand name for this stuff, and I still don't totally get why, but
I don't know if you've heard, but occasionally Google has marketing problems.
No way.
What do you think the first, I mean, is it just going to kind of be smart lights all over again? We start there and lamps, and or do you think we're going to see this stuff kind of launch from a different angle this time? Or is it just way too early to tell?
I mean, I think we'll see both, because I think what's going to happen is, and I mean, I know this from my personal experience, there's a lot of people working on a lot of things in their garages right now. And so this is all going to mature very quickly because, you know, these tools are all very easy. Obviously, these boards are pretty easy to use. I mean, you know, especially considering like things 10 years ago where you might have to do small manufacturing runs to do tests. You know, this is now just breadboards with wires. So the prototyping aspect is very accessible and easy. So I think we're going to see an explosion of these kind of devices. And that's going to be good and bad, right? Because we're going to get lots of noise and lots of crap, basically.
I think the most important thing we need to look out for is, like, when a really important Android Central story drops, we make all the lights in people's houses flash.
Which we can do.
I was going to say we can do that now, but
there's an IFTTT recipe for it already.
Somebody needs to totally do that. In a klaxon. Ooh, ah, that'd be great. All right, so Brillo and Weave. What was new, if any? And again, we're not looking for like a whole bunch of Zomai God news out of all this, but on the TV front, anything to look forward to there?
No, it was much of the same stuff. They talked about the lean back library, adding, which is an API to add, make your app compatible with Android TV. And they, of course, positioned Chromecast and Android TV as two flavors of this, set-top world that they're playing with, where Chromecast is really lightweight, and, your Android TV is a full Android implementation sitting on top of your TV. But, really nothing kind of different or anything different than what we saw before.
So really just more like introductions to developers about all this stuff still?
Yeah, I mean, they're just, trying to get people to put their games on Chromecast. That was a feature they kind of quietly announced at I.O., but and I don't think they even had any sessions about it. So there was a session about bringing your game to the Chromecast. But these are things that were available already and nothing like...
True. And we've got nothing. That was a decent little part of the keynote, too, was, hey, bring your game. I forget which one they used. Was it wasn't Angry Birds again, was it?
They might have used the one that you drive a boat around.
Oh, yeah.
Riptide,
yeah.
Which is a good game.
It's a great game. And Android Auto, and again, there was... that was a CES thing. We had some more head units from Pioneer and Kenwood, and I think, JVC is Kenwood, announced. And I actually checked in with them. I mean, there's no new functionality from the Android Auto side. You get some actually pretty decent improvements for things like Maestro and they just play better with all the existing, wiring and stuff in your car. And apparently the one thing they had was if you turned, you go into the source menu in the head unit, and this was Pioneer, and, say turn off, it wouldn't actually put the antenna down. That's kind of a thing. So, fixing stuff like that. But Android Auto, anything new from your end at Ubiquiti?
No, but, the nature of Android Auto is it is extremely limited, and it's going to be that way going forward. All you can do with Android Auto is integrate messaging and media, your messaging and media app. That doesn't mean that you can create your own UI or do any sort of deep integrations. It only means that you can use their existing APIs, which they provided for those two functionalities. You can adjust colors and do some very small things, but the UI is really, really strictly limited. You can't change text sizes or button orientations, anything like that, all due to safety regulations. They want to make sure that...
It's still a really smart thing. I still use Android Auto every day. The big limitation is still the 5-touch rule. I think it's like 3 in Japan. You can't tap more than 5 times from basically the instance that the app launches. And you see people work around that in different ways, or not at all, and that turns out really bad. But yeah, the only real customization you see is in the icons, in the, I don't know what they'd call the bar. I'll call it the play bar or whatever, where the play pause buttons are. And that can get a little annoying. So you see things just a little bit differently in different apps. But yeah, I mean, no, certainly nothing new out of CES on that front. Hopefully,
yeah,
it's not bad. It's still pretty good and still really functional. But yeah, I'm really interested to see what they come up with next on that.
And as I understand it, really, with Android Auto is it's the integration with the car itself that is really kind of magical. Like, the Hyundai, when you are driving faster, it raises the volume or things like that, where those integration points are direct. And it seems like so a third-party head unit isn't going to have those kind of magic integrations, and that's kind of the cool stuff of Android Auto. Otherwise, I mean, it's just like,
it's very like dumb terminal for me. Yeah, I mean, I'm
using it. It's just a dumb terminal, remote access to your phone. I mean, that's all it does.
I'm using it in a 2005 Civic.
Right, so you don't have those deep integrations that kind of add a little bit more magic.
Yeah, and I think having proper hands-free controls with it would not completely change my experience, but I do far less voice control stuff with it because I have to reach up and hit the button and make sure I hit the button and then wait. But what works generally works pretty well. I had a couple suggestions where scrolling menus are just awful. In some places they work here. For things like selecting apps, there's just so much wasted real estate, little stuff like that. And that's relatively easy for them to fix. I did think it was interesting at the LG keynote, and the funny thing about LG at CES, they always do 8 in the morning, which is early for Vegas, not so much early for those of us from different time zones. But they actually did mention Brillo and Weave. So, you know, they have some of the first commercially available products to use this thing that's not really ready to be used.
Hmm. So that's interesting. That. I did see they had a demo room, you know, during the social hour. Mm-hmm. They had a demo room where a lot of Googlers were showing off their 20% projects, which were both Weave. So Weave can run on other platforms than those two that we mentioned earlier. Like there was some Raspberry Pi demos. But there was some really cool stuff going on, you know, where so there is some interesting stuff that kind of these guys are playing with. Nothing life-shattering, but you can see that kind of the wheels are starting to turn in that direction.
Russell, is there like one connected thing you're just dying to have that we don't currently have?
Really, it's just the layer that pulls all the stuff together. I mean, like I'm super happy with connected bulbs. I think that we're finally in the right direction with locks that are, you know, behaving correctly on doors and you know, not causing more usability problems like some of the others that I've used over the past year. You know, really cool things coming from Amazon with the Echo and being able to pull everything together, but it's still just not 100% there yet. And that's the one thing I think what we're going to keep seeing is, you know, companies coming up with one-off ideas for their products and then saying, hey, and we also plug into all these things. And that's when it gets more interesting.
I'm a big fan of all this. Russell and I were just talking about before the podcast. I'm about to stay in a hotel that has, what do they call it, the digital key. So I'm going to use my phone to unlock the door. And part of me is really excited to try it. And part of me is like, what's wrong with a little plastic card? It's easy. It works, generally. We know it works. We know how it works.
Well, and in that case, it doesn't really decrease the amount of steps that you have to go through because you still have to check in at the front desk.
No, I don't, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm just going to go straight to the room.
Well, then that's the big thing is that you could just go straight to the room. That's why you don't wear – that's why the plastic card doesn't matter is you don't have to – we get to interact with fewer people. Yay!
I'm for that. That's a good thing, I guess. We'll see, unless I sleep in the hallway all night.
There is always that.
I'm trying to think if there's anything I want connected that's absolutely not. I still got to finish my my thing on the Ring doorbell, because I'm still having fun with that. My wife will show it to people in her office, and they'll think it's the coolest thing they've ever seen.
Yeah, I kind of got to get one of those.
Yeah, you might. You might. Should have sent it to you. The video's going to be fun. Can't wait to finish that. What about you, Mike? Anything you're just dying to...
I mean, I just want home automation, so I have a Ring video doorbell, which nice. I have, you know, Cox Internet, which, I'm sorry, Cox security system.
Yeah, how is that? We have Cox up here.
It's good. It's fine, but, I mean, kind of Russell's point is these are all different systems. I have a Philips Hue bulb, so I have a hub for that. It's like, but none of them integrate, right? The magic, you know, my magic thing is I walk into the house, disable my security system, and you know, my radio turns on and my lights dim, or, you know, and a martini is, you know, driven up to me by my robot butler. You know,
not sure if Mike's kidding or not. I don't think he's kidding.
That's my project. That's my Brillo project. Robot butler. Robot martini butler.
I don't think he's kidding, Russell.
I'm going to hang out with Mike.
All right. So the Internet of Things is still growing slowly. Oh, you know what I did play with at CES? The $1,500 Tag Heuer watch. Don't buy
everything you ever imagined.
Don't buy a $1,500 Android Wear watch.
Does it actually feel any better or worse on your wrist than, say, the Huawei watch that you're wearing right now?
Well, I mean, the one I tried on had rubber straps, so there's that. Look, it's very nicely made. It's a very nicely made Android Wear watch, which only goes so far still. And that's not Tag's fault. That's, you know, I mean, it's a Google project still. And I'm fine with that. But the software and $1,500 hardware don't quite make it yet. They might one day.
I've seen that watch. It is really beautiful. It does look like a high quality, really nice watch. I mean, actually the person I saw it on is a Googler who works for the Wear team. So, you know, I don't know if I wouldn't presume to say if he can afford it or not.
Sure.
But obviously, he's in it. You know, like, this is, like, I don't actually wear an Android Wear watch at all. So I'm not a good target market, and I've tried probably as many as you guys have. Mm-hmm. It's just not a compelling use case for me. So $1,500 is...
It's a lot of money. The Casio one was really interesting. It's $500, which is not cheap for an Android Wear watch. But it's one of the few specific use case watches that we have. It's big.
It's like an actual outdoor watch.
Yeah, I think I used the words manly man in my title for that, which I swear their product brochure is all manly men doing manly man things outside. No women, which the marketing person I was speaking to was quick to point out, and she was obviously correct. But yeah, it was like hiking and I think biking and fishing or trekking. They don't even call it hiking. It's trekking, which I assume is different. But yeah, it's very much meant to be outside and wet and banged around. My thing is, if I'm outside getting wet and banging things around, do I want to worry about whether my smartwatch is charged?
No, but it might make it a whole lot easier to grab things like a compass and, you know, decrease the amount of regular accessories that you would bring for that kind of thing into a single thing on your wrist.
Very possible.
Tracking your steps, things like that. I mean, when I have used an Android Wear watch, that's like a big use case, right? You know, you track how far you've gone or how many steps you've taken, elevation, all that stuff is fun.
Launching flares when you're attacked by bears. Things like that. Go Gadget.
You know what it's really not good for, but I keep trying because I'm kind of dumb, is playing Ingress on it. Like, the button is there, and right. So I get a notification that says, hey, there's a portal nearby, and I'll be, like, you know, sitting in a red light or something, and I go, oh, okay, let's do this. This is a mistake.
That's just a bad idea on any number of levels. How long does that battery last you, like 5 minutes at that point?
Oh, I don't know. Like, I never use it for more than a minute or two anyway, but, yeah, I can't imagine that you get a whole lot of battery left on it.
Oh, there goes Mike. Mike's back.
I don't have a cough button, so sneak away.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's keep things nice and light this week. January is going to be a little weird, boys and girls, because I'm in and out like all month. I don't think I'm actually not flying a single week this month, which is great. But let's just go through some of the Q&A. Davin wants to know, I just returned my Pixel C. It just wasn't worth the high cost at this point. What I really want is the Huawei MediaPad M210 running stock Android. To me, that would be his Nexus 10 2016 or the Nexus 10P. Thoughts? It's a decent little tablet. I need a little more time with that. I don't remember the display being all that much. And I spent a very little time with it because I didn't do the write-up. But yeah, I've been bouncing back and forth. I actually took the Pixel C with me to Vegas just because it slips in my gear bag really easily because it is nice and thin. But I don't have a cover on it, and that really makes me uncomfortable. I didn't take the keyboards because I don't need the keyboards, and it's just a little too big for casual use for me. I want something no bigger than Nexus 9-ish size.
It's super great for vainglory, though.
Yeah, it is.
To be perfectly honest.
It's interesting to me that you don't bring the keyboards, because to me that is like the compelling part of that.
Well, like, I mean,
that's what I want out of it.
There's nothing within Android to make it work any differently than any other keyboard I've ever used with a tablet, and that's to say not great. It doubles the thickness. It, you know, it greatly increases the weight, I think, by like 40%, and it's just not worth carrying around when I'm also carrying a full laptop. Mm-hmm. I like having a tablet with me. In fact, I don't think I left it in the bag when I left the hotel room, which is not uncommon. I did the same thing with the Nexus 9, but I do like having a tablet on the road. So yeah, it's still early days for the commercial product that you probably shouldn't buy yet, unless you really love it, in which case do. Sorry.
I was just going to say it's late days for the Nexus 10.
Yeah. Oh yeah. For the 10, absolutely.
That tablet is way out of life. I mean, he mentions, would that be an option, but the Nexus 10 is not. In fact, I doubt it's even available for sale anymore.
Yeah, no. He was asking whether the Huawei MediaPad, which they just announced last week, could possibly be a Nexus 10 equivalent for him. Probably not quite. But, you know, I mean, there are a lot of good tablets out there. It's just a matter of what you want to put up with, I guess.
And doesn't Samsung make really good tablets, of all things?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely, they do. Ben wants to know, with the release of the Pixel C, do you think we'll see a new Nexus tablet? I'd love to see Huawei make a new Nexus 9. I think maybe this summer, late fall, like the next Nexus cycle, yeah. It would be time. It'd be 2 years at that point. So, God, I can't believe that'll be 2 years. It seems like it was only yesterday. But it wasn't. It was a year and a half ago. Michael, opinions of the Note series being phased out this year. We're starting to talk a lot about the Galaxy S7 already. And why not? Because we're expecting it to probably show up at Mobile World Congress. I still think the Note 5 should have been the GS6. For me, you know, both in size and battery, that makes more sense as a phone. So how are they going to differentiate this year? I don't know.
Are they phasing out the Note 5, the Note 6?
I hadn't heard that. So
yeah, I think there's just a general assumption because we're getting multiple sizes of the Galaxy S line. But I think that means that Samsung went, hey, we didn't really differentiate these two lines this year. We need to do something special with the Note. And so as we get towards the second half of this year, like we often do with Samsung stuff, they'll answer that question.
Patience is hard. All right, Russell, I'll give you 30 seconds to tell Ryan how you would fix T-Mobile's binge on plan.
Two things. Either give me a notification when stuff doesn't work the way that it is supposed to because binge on is enabled, telling me that I can turn it off, or stop screwing around with third-party crap. If you support it, then awesome. If you do not support it, don't touch it. Either give me a button and like make that button super, super clear when something is wrong, or just stop touching things.
I tell you, the carriers have come a long way in the apps that they use, whether they're preloaded or you got to go get them later or whatever. But nobody does it as simply as the Fi app. The Fi app is just, it's beautifully done. It's simple. I don't have to jump through hoops to use it. I don't have to know my password to sign in. It works the way I want any other carrier app to work. And yeah, I think I agree. If I saw a little pop down that said, hey, we're, you know, to save you data, we're only showing you this at 420 or at 480. If you want to see it in higher resolution, just tap here. I'd be fine.
Well, even just like, so that would be fine, but also just, even if it was only there when something was buffering, or you know, when the video flat out wasn't playing, like if it drops quality, you know, we already know that that's happening. They make that pretty clear, so I'm not so concerned with that. But if I load a YouTube video, which I did in a bunch of different tests here, and it starts stuttering and stammering because YouTube did a quick speed test and decided that I was going to get a 1440p file, and then Binge On said, no, you only get 480. And so there's like a 5-second delay there until YouTube catches up. I think T-Mobile should take responsibility and say, hey, you know, YouTube's not a partner and things are kind of messing up here. Push this button to turn it off for a second.
Mike, I got to imagine as a developer having carriers screw with some aspect of your app's functionality, and it would just be maddening. And I've talked about this a little bit lately with Huawei and what they do with EMUI. In that user interface and messing with app icons, which I know we spend a lot of time designing, and not just us, but everybody. So when somebody else comes behind you and starts messing with your stuff like that, that's got to be just frustrating as hell.
Yeah, I mean, it's the nature of Android, right? We're not necessarily always in control of where our software goes. I mean, and you certainly have seen that with some of our bugs that have come in, you know, for Samsung only or, you know, only on this device. It's kind of the nature of Android, where it's a wild world out there, and when you put it out, you just hope for the best that people treat it nice.
We do the best we can with it. Timothy asks, speaking of Project Fi, are any of you using it as your primary provider? And if so, are you pleased with it, and do you plan to use it while traveling abroad? I used it in China, actually, and I bounced back and forth when I went over there. I started, I was roaming on AT&T at first, just because I had a good, I've got the LG V10 here, but it's a Korean variant, so... And it was banded well for that. But yeah, I switched over to Fi afterwards and worked great. Kind of nice not having to worry about, you know, checking all the roaming boxes and like you just turn it on and it worked.
I had to turn off my Fi service because it didn't quite do what I wanted to, but I'm also in a Verizon customer in a Verizon area. So, you know, it's entirely possible that Fi will grow this year to be, you know, what it is that I need it to be.
Well, I mean, and like anywhere, you're still beholden to whatever carrier it's working on.
Right.
In Vegas, it was worthless. AT&T rocked in Vegas this past week, and that's not something you could always say. But as Sasha Sagan reminded me, it's all about the building penetration at that point. And AT&T was great. And you know, Fi just didn't work at all. And that was, you know, so I've got all these unlocked phones on me, and I can't use Fi on any of them other than the Nexus. So that was... one consideration. But yeah, at home, absolutely, I'm using it. Been great. It'd be interesting to see how
I haven't been willing to give up my Google Voice number or transition it into Fi, sure. So I backed out of
Yeah, no, I moved my Google Voice number into it, and that worked seamlessly, I think. I had one issue, and I forget why. I think it was my fault.
I will say that moving it back and getting my Google Voice number back was effortless. Like, it didn't take me anything at all, and because I still use Google Voice for everything. And so getting it back didn't take anything at all. They were super friendly about that.
I know they're trying to get people to move SMS and MMS away from Hangouts a little bit. And I know there have been rumors about, you know, revamping the apps. And, of course, they're revamping the apps. They always revamp apps. But, yeah, I don't know that I can go back to not having my text messages just available everywhere all the time. That's just too good.
Can we stop everything real quick and address that Mike has, like, a giant beer stein with Google's logo on it that he's currently drinking tea out of?
Nice.
Look at this thing. That is really impressive.
Maptoberfest. Mike has all the toys.
And you, what's impressive is you actually think it's tea I'm drinking out of that.
Well, you said tea earlier, so by all means, enjoy your day.
It's like the podcast of old. Timothy also asked, do you think it'll be possible Google will add other carriers to Fi? Sure. I mean, it's technically possible. Why not? Absolutely. And finally, Ryan wants to know, is the death of Motorola exaggerated? I read a translated version of the Chinese article, so there was this article going around. I forget who wrote it. The Asian site, it's not a name I know. And there were, you know, translation issues a little bit about whether the Moto E and Moto G were getting killed off, and that the Motorola name's not, or that the Moto name's not going to be used anymore. Or no, sorry, Motorola name's not going to be used anymore. They're just going to call it Moto. And yeah, there was a lot of back and forth over what's disappearing and what's not. I don't know. I think the Moto E has been effectively dead for a while anyway, right?
I don't think the Moto G is going anywhere, because I think that that's still an incredibly popular phone for them. But yeah, the Moto E is kind of an in-betweener, and as we saw the prices come down on their X Pure Edition stuff, then it kind of creates this you know, phone that isn't really necessary anymore, you know, if you want to keep those kind of rigid product lines. So.
Yeah, that was just kind of the usual internet game of telephone.
Oh, here's a good one that just popped up at the last minute.
Yes.
Estimates from Doug Fry. Estimates on the time frame to the first Pixel C update. We were told 6 weeks, I think, wasn't it? Or that it was going to be on a Nexus-like release cycle.
Yep.
You know, while it's still super early days, I haven't seen an update yet.
So. No, I'm still on the December security update, and there's actually some really important stuff in the January update I would like to get on everything as soon as possible. But yeah, it's a good question. I have a feeling the first update might be a little longer than we would like, just because there's some stuff that needs to be fixed.
Yeah, I hope that the updates are more than just the security patches. I hope that they're, you know, actual things that are happening to the Pixel line that is separate from the rest of the Google products. I'd like to see them really push in that direction. So I'm happy to wait a little while, but they did also say 6 weeks. So,
no, people know better than to give ETAs on stuff like that.
Maybe they'll be like HTC and it'll be 6 business weeks.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've been, and we've been talking internally about these monthly software updates a lot lately, because I still think they're super important. Obviously, no one's doing them as well as Nexus. No one's going to do them as well as Nexus. Samsung is a...
BlackBerry has consistently done...
Okay, yeah. See, nobody mentioned that when we were talking about it yesterday. Yeah, BlackBerry's probably number two at this point, right?
BlackBerry has released both the December and the January update 2 whole weeks faster than the Nexus phones.
Now, BlackBerry's a lot more vertical. They don't have 5,000 SKUs to,
right.
to deal with.
They have a single phone to worry about, right. So it's not a big deal, but...
You know, I think I'm still on the October or November update on my Note 5. I'm on Verizon Note 5. And that's no good. I mean, that's probably the most popular Verizon or popular version of the Note 5 here in the U.S. So,
And Verizon is, of course, limiting, right? Because that is now a very, very narrow market. So their radios are different. So it's always hard to get stuff out to the Verizon carriers, the Verizon phones.
Yeah.
It seems absolutely. Like that's a real.
November, sorry, not October, November, but still. So yeah, like it's, I mean, we knew it was going to be hard no matter what, just because the way things work. But yeah, it's a tough road so far. Ryan also wants to know, productivity on Android tablets solved with Remix OS, that's the x86 version of Android. That's, no, it's not at all.
I haven't touched it yet. I've been waiting. Very patiently. I'd really like to play with it on the hardware that it was actually designed for in the first place, but...
What was that?
I don't remember.
No.
I know that a tablet came out that supported it initially.
I thought Remix had hardware specifically.
Yeah.
But you guys would remember that better than me.
Fair enough. I tell you what, I'm going to call it early this week. Because why not? We're kind of easing back into things. The rest of January is going to be a little weird. I might not even show up next week. How about that? We'll let Russell run things, as he hates to do.
I am going to... It's going to be a huge party. There's going to be fire and alcohol.
And balloons.
And no, we're probably going to talk about really nerdy crap.
And clowns.
So, it was actually called the Remix Ultra Tablet. I am just so bad at my job. I can't believe I forgot that.
So we'll let you do it without me.
You redeemed yourself.
Yes. Yeah.
You're good at your Googling skills, actually. Do we talk about Google I.O.?
Oh, yeah. So I.O. is coming up, same sort of time, late May, but they're moving it back to Mountain View. They're going to do it at the Shoreline Amphitheater, and there was much gnashing of teeth on Twitter about this. You got any feelings about that, Mike? I mean, look, I have a feeling Google's going to figure out the logistics of its own dev conference.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know. I've been to a lot of Google I.O.s, and they are kind of not different being at Moscone. It's kind of every year they're a little different, but they're kind of now become the same for me. It's good, you know, first world problem for me to have. So, you know, I think it certainly will be different.
This past year I thought was a lot more dev friendly and less consumery, both in scope, but also just in how they did it. It was less, it seemed like smaller groups. They had those little pods of smaller developer groups.
That, yeah, the problem is nobody could get into those small pods, so.
Yeah, I heard a lot of people were really unhappy with the smaller spaces this year.
Hmm.
A lot for me, and this is kind of having gone to a lot of IOs and just kind of being a veteran or whatever, I kind of skip the sessions because I think the real power is being able to be there and talk to people. Like, it's, you know, the best social network of my day, you know? And that really seems what they want to push Google I.O. for. Last year, there was way more conference space allocated to,
networking,
swing sets and, yeah, you know, grass than, you know, the conference, the rooms are all really small. So we'll see. I mean, I think if they do have this outdoor space, they're going to, you know, do a huge, big construction project that'll be really, like, unique. Obviously, they'll probably start working on it now and start, building structures. And so that'll be fun. I think it's going to be harder to travel. Well, cheaper to travel, I guess.
Maybe. Won't be staying quite as close. Plenty of time on that, and I have no doubt Google will, you know, figure out what it's doing. So the rest of January for us, a little bit up in the air. We'll let you know when the podcasts are happening. They're absolutely still happening every week. In the meantime, go ahead and send us more voicemails and emails, podcast@androidcentral.com. Just record your voice and send it our way, and we will be more than happy to pick those back up. I know we've kind of gotten away from them a little bit over the holidays, but I'm ready to go with those again. So podcast@androidcentral.com. Mike, you are obviously still working on our app, and we're getting closer to search. Finally, maybe, eventually. Not yet. No timelines.
However, get a disappearing comments button, which actually works so well.
See?
Fun, isn't it?
Like, when Phil was like, hey, so we got this feature, my very first thing, I said it out loud. I was like, well, I'm never going to use that. What do we care? And then, like, I figured it out, and it's so nice to have. So I withdraw my previous snark that no one heard but me.
Oh, good.
Nothing we can't make good better anyway, right?
So,
yeah. I'm trying to remember what our URL for that is. I think it's just androidcentralapp.com, maybe? I'll have to look. But yeah, go download our app if you haven't used it yet. Mike's working really hard on it. And I think that's it for us this week. Russell, Mike, thank you. Everybody,
see you later.
Everybody listening live, thank you. Everybody listening at home, thank you. And that's it. We will see you next week.
Goodbye.
Cheers.